I realize I'm going to be giving my back to somebody, and I don't want to ignore in the audience, but this is a report to the national board, and so I'm going to mostly let you read my back. But I do want to start off addressing especially the Berkeley reps here and the folks from Berkeley, because KPFT started 35 years ago in March, and it wouldn't be in Houston, Texas, if it wasn't for people from Berkeley and around the network, but especially Berkeley. We pulled some old archival, CDs now. Thank you, Brian. Of a newscast, Elsa Knight Thompson interviewing Larry Lee, the very first manager of KPFT, the first week that KPFT was on the air in March of 1970. And in it, the main acknowledgement for the existence of KPFT, other than, of course, lots of hard work by lots and lots of people all around. Was the fact that there was a microthon, and maybe I think some of y'all are old enough to actually have been in this thing, a microthon fundraiser to get the $7,000 necessary to get KPFT started in March of 1970. So, thank you for that. Okay, and now I'm going to talk to these folks here. We also are in the middle of our license renewal. KPFT's license expires on July 31st. We have every intention of keeping it and still being on the air on August 1st. No reason to expect not to, and we're working very closely with John Krigler in Washington to make sure that that is actually what happens on August 1st. We're dealing with the city of Houston on an occupancy certification. It ties into some of, not necessarily the ADA issues, but we've been addressing that. You know, the house was built by James Baker's grandfather, and 1915 in June was when people moved into it. So this old house, I'm not real sympathetic to other stations talking about needing space when, you know, y'all have been to KPFT, you know what that's like. It's great. It's tiny. It has the smallest studios that I've ever been in. We're dealing with the city of Houston on the issues of structural, electrical, and plumbing, and we have about a month to finish these projects, including replacing non-compliant doors. Plumbing and electrical issues, which are largely finished, but the structural issues are the big ones, including exit signage and emergency lighting and things like that. And we have made a lot of progress in the last couple of months. Just in the last few weeks, we've completed the majority of the electrical work in the kitchenette area, for those of you who've been there. We will have this finished, and we will be actually certified as an occupiable space. I don't know. We will have a certificate from the city of Houston that, you know, that certifies us as good to go next month. We're in the middle of a program director search right now. We have three open jobs at KPFT. The program director being one that we're working, of course, with the local station board on, as per the bylaws. We also have an opening for a membership coordinator. Those are both currently posted and are running through this month, and they've been posted all around the country. We also have an opening in the news department, as our interim news, our interim program director actually came from the news department. So when we complete the PD process in the latter part of July, we will post the news position again. So that's an ongoing deal, and we're moving forward on that. The HCAD lawsuit that's mentioned up there, I've heard stories from some of the folks around the country. People were talking about KPFT losing its 501c3 status, and this was never true. It's not true, but we researched ways to save money and found out that KPFT has been paying property tax for, well, its entire existence. and we are on a block with other nonprofits, and we're the only one who's been paying. So we investigated that and challenged the appraisal district for Harris County, and we were successful in the preliminary meetings with these people. A panel of three agreed with us that we should qualify for an exemption from property tax. That was in February. After the last meeting in New York, we got a letter from the appraisal district board. The review board had met on bank and had decided to overturn the panel's decision, and so they reversed it and challenged us to meet with them again if we wished to protest that. So, of course, we did. And we made, I thought, a very compelling presentation again that we should qualify on at least three of the 20 exemption options that exist in the state of Texas. But we were voted down 2-1. And at that point, our only option is to sue Harris County in civil court. And we are proceeding with that. We have about a month or so to file papers. Mike Martin, who is unfortunately no longer a member of the PNB nor KPFT's local station board, has agreed to work for us pro bono to make sure that we proceed with this suit, and we're very confident that we will, you know, get this judgment against Harris County. No. No, the interesting, I guess, just for those of you interested in political minutiae, Jim Maddox, who was the Attorney General in the state of Texas under Republican Governor Bill Clement back in 1983, was responsible for filing a judgment against KPFT, claiming that in the opinion of the state attorney general that Pacifica did not qualify for an exemption from property tax. And that was kind of the secret weapon that they whipped out in this protest hearing that was not presented to us in the original hearing back in February. So they pulled out a letter from 1983 and said, see, here's the proof. And the two guys agreed. KPFT's May fund drive, successful, first successful fund drive in a year, where we set a goal and we went over the goal. It wasn't $1 million, but it was $300,000, and you know, for the little old station that could, it was very good to have a goal that was set and was achieved. And it was not only achieved, it was achieved a day early, and so we finished the drive a day before we projected it to end. And that was, I think, a psychological boost that the staff, the volunteers, the listeners all needed that. And one of the reasons that I think that it finished early, well, I know that it finished early, was because of something we called a buyback/overdrive campaign. It was a series of two different mailings that were sent out to some of our members saying, for every $1,000 that you send in before the drive starts, we will reduce the drive by an hour. And we received over $16,000 from those two letters. And this is the second time that we've used this buyback campaign, and it's become increasingly successful because it's a good idea. There was something else that happened just before the spring fund drive was we made some program changes. And normally, you don't want to make program changes right after a fund drive because then you've baited and switched people. You've taken their money. I've been baited and switched by Pacifica in the mid-90s. You don't want to do it too close to a fund drive because then people might not find their show that they want to support. So it's a real dance that you have to do with the listener. We made these changes not quite 2 weeks before the fund drive. Which was really not the best time. You really want to give it at least 2 or 3 weeks to make that transition. But we were still nonetheless successful. And I think some of these new program changes have been well, pretty good, and we're still analyzing that. This is still a fresh experience, but making these changes a week and a half, less than 2 weeks before the fund drive was really kind of a gamble, and I think that it paid off. We also have a program council that has now been actualized. I've mentioned this in the last two meetings that we've had. Program council was something that was formed in collaboration with the LSB. We signed an agreement with the local station board in November of last year to form a program council that would work as a management committee, and it would be comprised equally of members of the board itself, of the staff, and the listeners, four from each of those three groups. The listener members were voted on by a combination of management and the local station board. The local station board was voted in by the board itself, and the staff got to elect the four members from the staff. And they've now met three times and have done an amazingly good bit of work in a very short period of time, and we're very optimistic about this program council being perhaps a model for the network, as we know that there's a mixed history of program councils and their effectiveness over time. I wanted to mention something about diversity and the committees of inclusion and some of the work that KPFT is trying to do. We are working with a group called the Center for the Healing of Racism to conduct a series of workshops and trainings for not only the staff, the paid staff, but for the local station board as well. And we want to expand that to the volunteer staff and to the community itself. And we'll be doing that over the course of the rest of this summer. Also, I was given a note by Ngozi to let y'all know that our community advisory board, which has been meeting, has a report that's being printed, and you'll be given that tomorrow. Also, in regards to the local station board, Ngozi and I have been seeing a lot of each other recently. We spent last weekend together. And Wendy was part of it too. Unfortunately, Joe and Teresa weren't around, but the local station board had a retreat last weekend, and it was part of a collaboration, it was part of a cooperation, and it was part of a moving forward together. And what we worked on all last weekend was learning to communicate in a nonviolent manner. And I think, you know, this is something that can apply to the entire network. We are the network of peace and social justice, but we beat the hell out of each other all the time. And we fought for years and years to gain this resource back, and immediately started beating each other up about who would get to run it and who would be in charge of it and who would make the decisions about it, and created this wonderful circular firing squad as soon as we got back inside the station. And it's unfortunate, and what we were trying to do last weekend in Houston was to break down some of those barriers and to come to a deeper realization that what we have in common far outweighs the differences that we have in our politics. And I'm real hopeful. I went into this meeting with a sense of very guarded optimism because recent history has given me ample evidence to be very pessimistic. Losing Mike Martin from the local station board has begun a cascade of negativity. making recent program changes and having members of our local station board declare war on management and use that term has been, well, has created feelings of lots of negative feelings have come out of this. So spending the weekend together and this was not just a touchy-feely, getting-to-know-you, la-la-la kind of hot tub Northern California kind of thing. I'm sorry.
Dwayne, I don't think you're going to get any sympathy from us.
That's more Central California.
Hey, you guys, we can't do hot tubs in Houston. It's too hot already, so they had to use it.
Okay, I'm sorry. I know that was a gross overgeneralization.
Some of them have hot tubs, I can tell.
But this was, I think, a very productive weekend. It was time well spent, and I think that we all came out of this past weekend with a better sense of commonality and of moving together forward. And there's a renewed sense of optimism, I think, on the board and on the staff in Houston. And I'm happy to report that, and I think that's a good spot to stop. Thank you.
Thank you. Bonnie, Bob, Wendy.
Thank you, Dwayne. Right over here. Thank you, Dwayne. I had a question. I got a bunch of calls from Houston about Flashpoint. What's going on? They actually had never tuned in to KPFT prior to Flashpoints. And now it's at 11 p.m. What was the reason behind that? It was, I believe, the per-minute best-grossing program on the KPFT dial.
Well, no, that's actually not true.
Maybe not, but one of the best.
Okay. Well, I was expecting a question about flat.
There's going to be a follow-up,
yeah.
Though.
The program, yeah, we were simulcasting it and carrying it live in Houston at 7 o'clock, and had been for about 3 years. And there was a point in time where it was an extremely successful program, fundraising wise. It of course is a successful program in presenting its point of view and putting itself out there. It was decided to move it to a later time slot. That time slot eventually ended up being 11 o'clock at night as opposed to 7 o'clock at night. Part of the rationale behind that was the public affairs programming that's locally produced, we wanted to give it an opportunity to enjoy the benefit of coming on after the other program change we made, which was to put Democracy Now! On a second broadcast at 6 p.m. So as a lead-in to significant and in many cases long-term locally produced public affairs programs, progressive informational programs, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender programs, Latino programs, labor programs, prison programs. These programs have all moved up. And, you know, something's going to have to give. And ideally, yeah, I don't know. I know that Flashpoints is not making the impact in people's lives at 11 o'clock that it makes at 7. I don't hear it nearly as much as I heard it before because I was usually still at work at 7 o'clock. But I brought along a chart that I can share with you that shows the journey of Flashpoints from the summer of 2002, which was the first fund drive that it was on in Houston, through the winter fund drive here in 2005. And the program peaked in dollars per day that it brought in actually in the spring of 2003 when it peaked out at $2,700. And in the most recent fund drive that it was on at 7 p.m., it was bringing in $750. And this was not a judgment that was based solely on the track record, the performance of this graph as far as the pledges and the dollars. But that certainly was a piece of the puzzle.
Okay, one, I have a follow-up to this because this is obviously very important to me. Houston has a large Arab American community, and Flashpoint spoke to that community. Right now, they've been basically sidelined, in my opinion at least. That's what seems to be at least the call that I've received from Houston, by the way. And I don't represent WKPFT, but I got the calls because I'm the only Arab on this board. So my question is, what was the process, the outreach process to the community? How did you arrive at this juncture, this decision? Did you involve the community in this process? Did you reach out to the communities out there? What was the process? How quick was the decision made from the time that you felt that you wanted to make it to the time that it was made?
The decision on moving that program to a later time slot was made fairly rapidly.
So therefore did not involve community, I presume.
It involved the community of programmers at the station. Involved our Arab Voices programmers.
But besides the programmers, it did not involve the community that makes community radio. The community, the listeners, the subscribers, correct? So my question then is, how did 11 o'clock get derived? Because, okay, 7 o'clock, you want it to be for local programming. That's wonderful. What about 8 o'clock? I mean, 11 p.m.? I'm not even up at 11. I mean, I'm in bed by 10 at the latest. Okay, I'm serious here. I do not hear anything on KPFA beyond 9:30. I'm falling asleep. I'm getting ready to go to bed. So I'm trying to find out, and I have the floor. Thank you, William. What I'm trying to find out is, what was the process in involving the community in making this decision? I think this is very critical.
Yes, William.
The community, as represented by the hundreds of volunteers who produce the programming that is the lifeblood of KPFT, where we have a paid staff of 13 and only two are actually, you know, our news people are the only two people on the air who are paid to do programs. All of our other programs, the, you know, 75 local programs are all done by the community. And the entire community was consulted, the community of programmers. And we held a open meeting in the backyard at KPFT. Nearly 100 people came to that. A lot of voices were heard. A lot of views were expressed. And the decisions were not made lightly, and the decisions are, nothing is carved in stone. I mean, this is a constant, is that this is an ever-changing experience. And the program council now, which is very representative of the community, this is something they're looking at.
Wendy?
I think Bob was before me.
What's your point of order?
It's just keep, and I mean, I don't, there's not going to be an answer to this, and I don't want to start another Pacifica feud, but just the discussion of, like, it seems that people need more information around answering questions like that, and I don't know that it's, but yeah. I don't know if it's a part of the agenda to,
come on, William, let's
to go item by item, so.
I think I have a feeling. Wendy?
Actually, Bob was ahead of me, so I'll
I'm sorry. Bob?
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Dwayne, for the report. I want to follow up on the program changes because, of course, I'm from New York, so I know nothing about what's on the air, and just have the most unreliable source of information, the Internet, which I never trust. So that's why I'm asking you directly. Can you talk more about the morning changes? Because I read a lot of complaints that, and you and I were both active in the struggle against the corporate hijacking of Pacifica, and one of the demands that you had felt very strongly about was that the old regime had stripped a lot of the air of hard-hitting public affairs and replaced it with music at prime time. And, of course, Democracy Now! And others were victims of that. So can you first clarify, is it true that some of the changes you made recently involved replacing public affairs with music at drive time in the morning? And then a more general process question, you just mentioned that the Program Council will now look at these changes. Why didn't you wait and let the Program Council look at the proposed changes before they went into effect?
Let me answer the second part first, because I think it's really important to understand this. When we met in New York, everyone in this room, and this has been a miscommunicated piece of information that's been spun in lots of different ways since the New York board meeting, that Lonnie reported that at current trend projections, KPFT is looking at a $150,000 shortfall by the end of this year. And that was because we have had consecutively increasingly poor returns on our fund drives. A 7% shortfall in the fall drive, a 20% shortfall in the winter drive. At that current rate, not making changes, I think, was dereliction of duty. Yes, it would have been nice if the Program Council, which we signed off on and were ready to bring into life in November of last year, had been operational before these changes needed to be made. That would have been the best thing. But I think that going into this fund drive, this spring fund drive, which was critical to KPFT's meeting its financial budgetary goals, we had to make an executive decision, and we did, and we stand by that. Mm-hmm. So that's where I come down on that.
Wendy?
The first part of my question. The first part about the
nature of the programming changes. The only program change that seems to have elicited national attention, other than the Flashpoints move to later in the night, was the move of Democracy Now!, which has been on the air as long as Democracy Now! Has been on, at 9 o'clock, except for those months when the previous regime took it off for the latter part of 2001. We temporarily put it on at 7 o'clock in the morning preceding a visit to Houston by Amy in March, before this last meeting. We took that 7 o'clock broadcast, which is live. That's when it's on live in New York. And we chose to move that to the 6 o'clock time slot.
PM.
That the I totally agreed with the argument that Democracy Now! Should be accessible to as many people as possible, and that the large part of the argument about it needing to be on at 7 was driven by this logic that there are students, there are teachers, there are day workers, 9-to-5 people who can't listen to it in its 9 o'clock broadcast time. However, knowing that 25% of all of the income to KPFT comes from that 9 o'clock broadcast of Democracy Now!, I certainly wasn't going to take that off to put it on live at 7. But the 7 o'clock broadcast, I felt the rationale behind that was equally met putting it on at 6 o'clock at night. And any students, teachers, day workers, they all have that opportunity to hear it fully at 6 p.m.
Wendy, I'm sorry. Wendy and Ray, then we're going to move on.
That's all I'm trying to get clear.
The 7 o'clock hour was music and is now again music. It was not music for 6 weeks.
Wendy?
My question's evolved several times as this has gone on. But as you know, Dwayne, that once you became the manager, the station became more successful, raised more money Over the last 3 years, we've raised more money than any of the previous regimes ever did. And then, you know, we've had more members than we do now, but it's still higher than it was during the previous regimes. And I think one of the things you tried to do was to return to the mission a lot more, but still keep the people who had just joined during that previous Sound of Texas regime on board too. And the way I saw it, the only thing that had changed in the time that we suddenly had these two bad drives was that you'd taken off the World Cafe for airing underwriting announcements from war profiteers, which was a great move. And so it was after, a year after that, that this happened. And so what I don't understand is why I don't have a problem with Flashpoint so much. I have a problem with all those changes at the same time. And when you look, I mean, even the new music show in the morning now is not the same music show it was before we put Democracy Now! In that time. It's now Americana 5 days a week played by different hosts. Before it was kind of different kinds of music each day. And then we did that Democracy Now! Thing for 6 weeks, which people had worked on that for years. People had been saying they wanted that for years. We changed it 2 weeks before the fund drive at a time that we really, really, really needed to make a lot of money. So that, you know, and what we have now, and then to put Democracy Now! On at 6, we had to take off 6 really good shows to do that out of drive time. So basically now, and the music in the afternoon goes until 5:30. So we've lost an awful lot of public affairs shows, even though I read in Susan's report that we added 8 hours or something, but they're not at the times when people can hear it. So recently, a lot of people are outraged. They felt like they've really supported the station through all these times and that they've just been slapped in the face. My question is, I'm reading now in more correspondence that when we were having strategizing meetings. When the second bad fund drive happened, everybody was getting together. What are we going to do about it? We came up with some plans on the LSB level, and we were starting to implement them. And then all of a sudden, all these changes happened overnight. And I'm reading now that there may have been advice from up above you to say, go back and get some of Garland's audience back. Is that true?
No.
Okay, so.
No, and, you know, the morning program that has gone back to music actually has also brought KPFT's news to the morning. It's also brought at 6:30 in the morning, there's a free speech radio news insert. At 7 o'clock and at 7:30, there are local news inserts. And I think it's really important in Houston, which is, I guess, after Los Angeles, probably the most car-dependent city in the country, that we have this local program on, that we can tell people if a tanker truck exploded on the Katy Freeway and that they maybe should figure an alternate way to work or something like that, as opposed to having satellite programming.
I want to thank you. You're very quickly, because we're running over time. Much.
Yeah, well, I have a question about, I know Ngozi is sitting right here, but what is the station doing to diversify its listenership and, you know, bring the community into its work?
Well, we're doing as much as we can. I mean, we're working with our committee of inclusion. We're expanding our community advisory board to bring in representative people and groups from all around the community that either represent organizations or are members of very divergent constituencies in the Houston area. We're doing outreach programs. We have a summer youth intern program where we're bringing youth between the ages of 12 and 25 into the summer to work as interns for the summer, and giving them an hour, the noon hour on the final Monday of each month, to actually create a program. just to name a couple real quickly.
I mean, a sort of general question. Last year I was there and we met with some community group, and there was it was mostly African American, and there was the palpable sense of feeling of exclusion from the workings of the station, and that's part of the reason I'm asking. How do you measure progress with the change you talk about? Have you observed any progress?
From like the program changes we've made and things?
Yeah,
we've only made them
measure
in the last month, so I can't really, you know, analyze that so rapidly.
So are those program changes as a result of perceived problems or just general policy, you know, Pacifica type? I'm saying I was there last year and I heard some stories that were rather troubling in terms of people not feeling connected. And I'm saying, how is it being how is that being addressed?
I'm not really sure all the different stories you've heard, but I know that we are doing a lot of work to address the concerns of all the different constituents that are part of the community in Houston.
Okay.
And just let me conclude by saying, we'll see you in Houston in 3 months, and you can see this for yourself. And we look forward to that. And we will hopefully be having a wonderful 35th anniversary gala concurrent with the visit of the PNB to Houston.
Oh, so bring your
Houston
checkbook.
So that's exactly what I was going to end with. Yeah, it's only $100 if you're a PNB member.
Thanks, Dwayne.
Thank you.
Thank you.